just going to start by introducing our panelists. Terry Lau is the head designer of Beehive Design. He's the designer of all of my books. He'll be bringing in some sort of input on collaboration from the design point of view. Maggie McDonald is a musician in The Hidden Cameras and Public of Safety. And to her side, is Sally Mackay, previous editor of Lola magazine. On her side is Mark Newey, who's a cartoonist and actually coordinated all the rooms in this like all the display rooms in Kansas, which is fantastic. So I'd just like to start by sort of saying for myself what was the interesting thing about this the panel name is feel free to sit down or whatever. The panel name is Are You Too DIY? Are You Too Do It Yourself? And that comes from my own sort of my own experience of maybe, you know, at some point I should ask other people for help. I mean, I've gotten a lot of things done by just relying on my own sort of skills and talents and whatnot. But at some point, I think that there's always someone who can sort of be brought in to sort of help out and sort of really sort of, I don't know, sometimes you'll see it in different independent projects. You can see, especially with the design, for instance, they're excellent writers, but they really should have got someone to help them with design. Like, it would have just pushed the project further a little bit, like, just a little up another notch. So, I'd just like to sort of start with Terry and then go down the line about sort of initial comments on what they think about collaboration and how they think it might be structured to sort of suit all the people involved.
Well, yeah, I think with any collaboration in creative endeavor, it's really about focusing on what is really important. Is it the fact that you're able to be hands-on and do it 100%, or are you trying to focus on really creating that project to the best of its ability? Like, making sure that, okay, if there are skill set that is required beyond yourself, you're able to sort of look to your friends or colleagues to be able to contribute, and making sure that you're really focusing on the project being the primary thing rather than, oh yeah, this is my signature all over this piece, and you know, it's just really creative masturbation. So I think it's really about doing the right thing rather than doing the stuff that you like all over the place.
The thing that suits the work,
exactly.
Like, or that helps the work, not necessarily, you know, satisfies your ego.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
I think with collaboration, the most important thing is finding people that you can work with without it getting too tense or sensitive. People think that collaboration is really a simple thing, but it's as intense as living with someone or having a relationship. Often, being in a band, the kind of fights that you have are not really fights you would have with a coworker across the desk from you, but they're the kind of things that you would have in a relationship, except it's a relationship with a group of people, maybe four people, maybe seven people. So if you can imagine what it would be like to be in a couple that consisted of seven people, you know, that's what collaboration can be like, and you have to be just as sensitive and to each other's needs in those situations. And also, breaking up with a band can be just as difficult as breaking up with a relationship. So, but it's very much worth doing, because as you know, as Terry was saying, that you have everyone's creative forces together, and you can enrich each other's work in ways that you couldn't necessarily just do on your own. And so it's great, but you have to be just as careful as when you're selecting someone to live in your apartment. For instance, you have to live with this person's ideas and their sensitivities and their feelings, and so you have to exercise caution as well as engaging each other's passion. So that's my initial.
I guess my first thought is that there's the best thing about collaboration is that you create something that's more than the sum of its parts. and you know, everyone who's involved gets to make something that they wouldn't otherwise be able to make without those, without the input of the others. And the worst part is the feeling of letting go of your own creative vision, or that maybe your ideas is, and your position is being threatened. And those, that second part is, the first part, if it's working well, comes really naturally, and that's the great result, and it's kind of evident in the process. The second part is trickier, that the downside is trickier, because to some extent, you have to, you even in the best scenario, there will be some points of conflict. Even in the best collaborative scenario, you're going to run into spots where you disagree, and sometimes really majorly disagree, and sometimes it'll feel really important what you're it'll feel like it's a founding principle or a key principle. But from my experience, even some of the most key things that you could fight about that feel like you're fighting for, like everything that you believe in, if you lose the fight and move on, you can look back and you go, oh my God, like they were right. A lot of the time, it's those are the places where when you do give in, you use the first part. You've like got to that place where you've actually done something that was more than some of those parts. Now, of course, you don't want to give in all the time, because then you wouldn't be enjoying yourself and it wouldn't be your project. So my tips would be to, like, in the point of conflict, to really consider going with the other person's idea. But in the long term, to really identify for yourself, what are the things that you want to see happen in this collaboration? What are the priorities and what are the pieces that really matter to you? And then just make sure that enough of those things are in the overall picture, that then when it comes to the individual conflicts, you're willing to kind of trust and let go, because you know overall it's going the way that you want it to go.
Yeah, one thing that I really like about collaborating is the sense of the unexpected, like all this conflict that comes up. I like to treat it like a game, basically, where you don't know the outcome and you're constantly being challenged by these new problems, and it sort of keeps your brain sort of really on its toes in a way. So yeah, I think one way that I like to approach the collaboration is as a game, so like this sort of like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And if there is conflict, then yeah, you can battle it out or you can go with it. But either way, you're gonna come up with something, like, I don't know, there's never anything really to be lost, I find. Like, and the stakes are never that high. Like, and also like and the conflicts are really just about, you know, moving forward and learning, and not really about being certain about the outcome. So that's how I think about it. Like, and it's also like, yeah. For me, a lot of times when anything, even by myself or with other people, I just sort of, I'm really curious about what will happen. So I just sort of let it happen in a lot of cases. But I think, yeah, that's, and each point of conflict is like the potential for it to go another way. And it could go either way, and it could just be, should be just as well. Like, you know, there's no, there's no right or wrong creative answer, basically. But I think, so I think like you sort of like surf it.
One of the things you said about stakes, like how high are the stakes? I think one of the things to do is with collaborations, if you can manage to make the stakes very low, then and not like, I mean, obviously you want to be engaged and passionate about it, but make it to the point where like, you know, it's not your main thing. Like I found, like if you like, I mean, for me, for instance, I'll have a book on the go. I'll be writing a book, and then I'll have some other side project, a little video I'm making. I collaborate with Mark. Actually, all these people are expert collaborators as far as I'm concerned. And either I've collaborated with them or I've seen the amazing sort of fruits of their labor, and they seem to enjoy it. So, but basically the idea is, I think if you can manage to keep the stakes low, like make it not, don't put all your eggs in that one basket of collaboration, because it helps to be able to say, okay, well, it helps you like kind of free yourself from really worrying about it too much, and have fun and play, which is a big element that I think collaboration is about. But I'd be interested in knowing if you guys have learned certain strategies over the years in terms of how to set up something in advance. Like one of the things I do, and it's kind of an awkward conversation to have is like, you know, you have your beers, you know, you get a little tips and you're excited about this project, you're talking about it, and then afterwards, like, you have you know, the next day or the week after, like, you know, how does it get started, right? How do you structure a kind of timeline that you might kind of, you know, that you might sort of achieve the project or finish the project, that kind of thing. So I was hoping to hear your comments.
Right. I think first off, when you sit down at the cafe, when you get the three or four and you chat about it, yeah, like that instance is very exciting and it's new, it's fresh, everybody's on board emotionally and creatively. And it's really about a week later what happens. So there's needs to be that one person that wants to take charge and sort of possess it and make it its own project, and that would sort of, you know, he's the person or she's the person that would set the pace, where it's about the schedule. It's not really about the creative work. It's about administration, organization, when are we going to meet, and what cafe, and what time.
Yeah. I think if you try to do that collaboratively, it'll just dissolve. So really, it's a good idea to have one person who will do it, like, do the scheduling and all that, sort of like just shaping the group, sort of. Yeah.
And so that the pressure's off of each person, so
right.
that they can just, oh, okay, this is my agenda, I'll just come and,
right.
and have my input and, you know, make sure that everything's run efficiently and smoothly.
Right, right.
That's been my experience. If we had someone that is managing the project, that makes it that much more.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think from the start you have to be aware of your own schedule and what your own time limitations are, and be very open with your ears to what your collaborators' schedules are like, because otherwise you could be kind of disappointed when you find out they only have 1 or 2 days a week or limited time to work on this thing with you. What it is that brought you together, maybe have a drink together, and make sure you maintain those social ties and not just the working relationship to keep things smooth and cohesive between the collaborators.
We had, as Jim mentioned, I used to be one of the co-editors of this magazine called Lola. It was an art magazine, Toronto art magazine. And we were pretty ambitious with the magazine, and I think in our case, it wasn't, it was our primary thing. It wasn't a secondary thing for us. But in the initial stage, there were three people who were kind of co-editors, co-owner editors. And there was myself, Catherine Osborne, and John Massier. And John had a full-time job as a curator at the Koffler Gallery. So he was really into doing Lola as a zine, but like not on a regular publishing schedule. And Catherine and I both were like, after our first issue, we were on the same page of really feeling ambitious about it. So that was a little bit, there was a period of time where we were kind of trying to figure out how this could work and how to sort of apportion less work to John and more work to us, and could that work out. And in the end, he ended up leaving and still contributing. But when that, in a way, was a relief for Catherine and I, because we could just then like plow forward. But in a way, it was sad that we weren't able to kind of keep all on the same page. But with something on that scale where you are really trying, like we were attempting to make a living off of this collaboration. And there's a lot of, in that case, the stakes are high.
Yes.
And there's a lot of pressure on the relationship. So there was a few things, if there's like a project like that, there's a few things that I would recommend. And one is to really be on the same page about the financial expectations, right? Like, we drew up a business plan, which everyone says draw up a business plan, and it's like, you know what, it's actually a really great experience to draw, even a small project. Do a business plan and like do, just even like read the chapter headings of how you structure a business plan. Even doing that will give you a sort of shape, and it can be very exciting. It sounds tedious, and it is tedious, but you have to sort of face this kernel of something that lets you know if you want to do the project or not.
About doing a business, predicting the future.
Yeah,
right, on paper,
it is.
It's like, okay, this month. It's like you're predicting the future, basically. It's a lot of fun that way. If you treat it like that kind of exercise.
Yeah.
Like that.
And it's like, you're like, oh my God, we need $100,000 to do this. There's no way we could do it. And then it's like, but if we did get $100,000, all of a sudden you're contemplating this thing that you would never have contemplated before, right? Which can be really great. The other thing, just I'll shut up in a sec, but the other thing that I think is really key to that kind of collaboration, and I think actually to a lot, to any group activity like that, is to present a united front. So we would argue bitterly, bitterly, for hours with tears and shouting and hanging up the phone and stuff, but when any decision that we came to, we both were on side when the decision was made. You know, like I knew that whatever I decided was then whatever I conceded to or whatever. I wasn't going to go around saying, oh, Catherine wanted to do this, and I didn't want to do it. But now, no, don't do that. It's like your group, you go forward.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I have some other questions, but does anybody have a... Yeah?
I was wondering what experiences were around recognizing that you were doing too much yourself and finding a way to work through that? Because, I mean, I know for me, I've worked on a lot of projects where I've gotten really engaged, really empowered, really impassioned about something, and then kind of looked up and gone, oh my God, I can't do this all by myself. What have I done? So I'd like to hear what you guys have experienced with respect to that and how you've gone about finding a solution to that.
Okay.
Trying to think if I've had that problem. Well, I think this is where sort of the planning comes in, I think. Like, this sort of, what helps, I guess, in any project is to, like, have these little small chunks and kind of, the more you do stuff, the better you are at the planning and realizing how much work they're going to be. It's basically trial and error, I think. I don't think I've ever really, I'm at the point now where I can recognize problems, but it just takes a lot of trying and doing and like experience to figure out, okay, this is way too much for me to do in a week or a month or 2 weeks. I think that's how I've always approached it. And yeah, every project I try to have like a one, can I do this in a week? And if I can, then I'll probably do it. Can I do the first step in a week? You know what I mean? Like there's a sort of scale of time that I like to operate at. And if it's much longer, it makes me nervous. It probably won't happen. So that's, I hope that helps.
I'd like to add to that I think it's extraordinarily difficult to bring someone else in later. Like if you already have ownership over a piece of the project or the project, it's much, much, much more difficult to divest that ownership to someone else and have them take it over than it is to start with sharing the project. And I don't have a lot of ideas about how to divest ownership, and I think that's something that faces a lot of people, especially when a project grows. Right? You like get something and it's going really well and the workload increases, then how do you bring other people in? It's extremely difficult, and I think it involves some really hard decisions about the vision. You have to let go of something if someone else is going to take it over. Mm-hmm. And that's like everyone would
unless
have their own
of
way
of
doing
them.
That. Yeah, or yeah. Unless you can pay them. Yeah. Exactly.
And but then you're still giving up control if you can pay somebody.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's actually a really big point to bring up. The question of how, like, I mean, when, for instance, I was working on a video game project, there's this, when I was bringing in programmers, actually me and Mark were working on it together, when we met programmers who were interested in sort of collaborating or whatever, it was great until they got a job, and then it was over. Because they were working like crazy at their job, which was coding all day. It's the last thing they want to do when they go home. So it's a question of, okay, seeing like, okay, well, like sometimes the skill set that you need to sort of make your project better is something that's very actually economically sort of valuable. Like design is a good example. Like, I mean, sometimes, I mean, the stuff Terry's done for me, I couldn't afford in a million years. You know, and that's, you know, so it's a question of, okay, well, how, knowing that, and sometimes, like, knowing that, how do you kind of hammer out something, like a schedule, for instance, that kind of, you know, might overlap with their work schedule? Like, that's a very difficult thing, because you're saying to someone that you want them to prioritize something that you're working on for no money over something that is that they get paid for. So, the money issue is is a big thing. And yeah, I just was wondering if you guys had any comments on that, further comments.
I think that definitely when you're working on a project that doesn't pay and you're asking people to give up, you know, an evening of work, for instance, in one of my bands, there's a fellow who has a job where he works evenings on weekends. And so when we're saying yes or no to playing a show on a weekend, we're basically asking him, well, can you give up a shift at work? Mm-hmm. And so it's our job in the band to be really understanding about it. If he doesn't want to do it, we can't bug him about it. I mean, right. It's his decision, really, because we're just giving up a Saturday night,
right.
And he's giving up a shift at work. So for us to play on a Saturday, he has to really want to, and we just have to accept that. So we have to be very, you know, when you're collaborating with people who are making an economic sacrifice to participate, you can't give them any grief about it, especially passive aggressive grief, which is worse than aggressive grief.
Yeah. The other thing that occurred to me was that with money, like often, like, I mean, I make a bare substance living off of my books and the projects that I work on. And when I ask people, for instance, to help out with doing something or contribute some art or that kind of thing, it gets to the point where I feel like I'm a little self-conscious about it because I'm getting paid for it, but they're not. And one of the things that I try to do is make their input to it as easy as possible, like absolutely minimal involvement. Just like, I mean, I've got to the point where I'll try to get it like 99.9% of the way there design-wise and then ask him to tweak it. Because I don't want him to have to do the basic, you know, the drudgery of the initial stuff and all that kind of thing. And yeah, so I was wondering if people wanted to.
This reminds me of one experience I had. I was doing like a flash animation, it was a commercial thing, and I had to get voices, people to do voices, and I wasn't getting paid that much, so I just asked friends to do voices, but for them it was fun enough, it was weird enough for them to be projecting their voices into this cartoon world that they were interested in enough, they just did it, and I had a really good time doing it. And I think that's another thing, is to just make it fun for them. Like, so make it so that the other person can also learn, but you can kind of focus on what strengths they have. Basically, I picked them for the quality of their voice, so they didn't really have to act, they just have to talk with some kind of emotion with these lines. So it was just sort of like trying to pick the exact right people who would have to do something with the minimal effort, but would get the right effects.
And sometimes you ask people, like, say, a person's a designer, but they do illustration on the side. Sometimes they're much more interested in contributing illustration because they don't really exercise that much. You know, and there were sometimes the positions are reversed. They're illustrators, professional illustrators, and they do that all day. And so to do a little bit of design, that they like that, you know, and they have the talents for it. But you're not asking them to do another hour of work of the stuff that, you know, variety is a really important thing, I think. Mm-hmm.
I think also a symbolic remuneration is very important to people more than we realize. You know, for instance, if you have a whole bunch of people singing on a record and you can't afford to pay them, I mean, to thank them in your liner notes is very, I mean, that means more to people than we often realize, to say, put their thank them by name in the thing that will be published along with the record, and to give them tickets for things and even a free album. I mean, these seem like small things for, you know, you might think, oh, well, that wouldn't be of value to them, but that's very important. It's very much, it means more to people than we know, this symbolic remuneration, especially if it's not a huge time sacrifice that they made, but an afternoon. It's really meaningful to someone to be thanked in something that will be published or in a way like that.
For me, I kind of use a different approach than Jim, where I try to be a little bit of a salesperson, where I try to get them as excited about the project as I am. Where, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to choose my own sort of team members, where I know exactly, okay, if this is the kind of illustration I'm looking for, I'll go to this person and they'll be glad to do it because this would give them an opportunity to showcase their work in a certain environment or venue. So making sure that they understand at the end, it's not just my project that they're involved, it's our project.
Right,
they have a huge part of it, and they're proud of it, they can show it off, and it becomes theirs as well. So
Two is that you ask people to help you, and then you help other people. It's like a barn building type attitude. So everyone's got particular skills, and there's definitely strength to sort of combine them for each individual's different projects. That always works. That's always a really good way to think about it, is that you're just building each other up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, one of the things, like I continually say, like I publish my books independently, but now I don't do it alone. wouldn't it be possible, because I have a dozen people who contribute input, feedback on the work, on the writing, and you know, and it's, you know, and I always, you know, there's a little bit of a skill trade going on that's kind of outside of the normal economic kind of trade sort of system, but it's still very useful, and can foster really interesting relationships between people. Like there's some people that, you know, I don't really hang out with that much, but we have such close interests with their, you know, with that, like in terms of what we produce and whatnot, that we work together quite a lot. You know, it might not be like as close a friendship as, you know, some of my other friends, but there's a different type of relationship you can build with different people, and it doesn't mean that necessarily you're using them for, you know, the design or their whatever illustration. Like I think it's, you know, but it's, you know, those are some of the anxieties I have about using people or like being a boss. I hate that feeling of, like, you know, like talking about managerial things. It took me many years to kind of get to the point where I felt comfortable, you know, coming up with timelines and deadlines and asking people if that would be okay. Could you do it by this time? And then kind of following up with that, you know. So
I think just like the hardest part of this is being clear with yourself in the first point, in the initial stage of what your involvement and investment is. Like, do you want someone to come in and share the responsibility with you?
Right.
Do you want someone to come in and be as excited about the project as you are and like share the anxiety about the project? Or do you want someone to come in and do a specific piece of work on the project? And if you can separate those two,
mm-hmm.
then I think it's a lot clearer when you go to someone. Chances are you're not going to get anyone to share the anxiety if you're already going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because they just won't. It's not theirs. They're not invested to the extent that you are. But that's the end of that book. It's done. So yeah, so I think it's like, and then if you are looking for people to do specific pieces, then think about, you know, for instance, we had, this is a scene that I just did with my partner, and his friend did this drawing for him, and Rob is like, he's like, I want to come over to your house, and I want to sit down in your kitchen, and you tell me what to draw for your zine, between these hours and these hours.
Right.
And we were like, great! So George yes. like made up this whole list of things he wanted Rob to draw, and Rob's had there and do them, and they're like, it's fabulous, right? Mm-hmm. And that's so easy, because there's like the right person, and just like, it was, who said that? Somebody said that, like the right person for the right piece, then you just match it together and you get exactly what you want.
Yeah, also if you can make the collaboration as much like hanging out as possible, then it always goes smoother. Like it's just hanging out, and it's fun. Like you just fold it into your everyday life. Like it's like you're hanging out with friends, you're making stuff.
I wanted to just mention about this because this is our first like real collaboration together, George and I, and he really wanted to do this cut. I fought bitterly against it, and like everyone who's coming to our table is going, wow, that's such a great shape. Yes, it is. It works really well, actually.
It's another example of how when you collaborate, you are enriched in ways you never knew you could be.
Well, it's true. And when I did decide to concede, then I was working on design, and I worked really hard with that idea, you know, and then that gave me like, so actually now, I'm kidding in a way about that, but actually now I'm really proud of this, and I'm proud of this cut, even though I disagreed with the idea. I feel like I was part of the process that came up with that idea, and I worked toward its success, you know, so that's very rewarding. The conflict can be really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there's no wrong way to go, really. Except this would have been boring.
It's very interesting. There seems to be these sort of two parallel processes of work going on. One of them is work on the actual artifact that you're producing. The other one seems to be work on yourself. You have to embrace the fact that you may have to evolve a little bit. You may have to work on some of your own issues. How do you work with that?
But there's a good anecdote for that one. Is that one of those BBC mammal documentaries, the history of mammals, it talks about monkeys. And there's a proportional, the monkey brain develops, proportional in size, from smallest to largest, from depending on the size of the social group that the monkey is living in. So say you have a monkey that has, the social group is 5, their brain is like this. And for social group is 10, the brain is like this. 20, the brain is like this. And 60 billion is a human brain, right? So I think there's something we can take from that. You gotta evolve. The more you deal, humans are the most complicated things you could ever interact with, basically. And that's gonna really evolve your brain.
Alligator brain, right?
Oh, yeah.
And a primate brain. So there's all that stuff in.
A lot of animals inside of us.
I did relate to something that Jim said earlier with this, too. As an artist, part of the reason I'm involved in publishing and making art is because I am kind of a megalomaniac and I want to create this little world that's, I want to make this thing. And so one thing I do is I make sure that I have my own projects where I'm. That I do have my own projects where I get to exercise that. But when I do that and I make my little world, that's one kind of function. But when I collaborate, it's more like making a person than it is like making a world. Because when we collaborate, the thing takes on its own life and it surprises all the people who are involved in it. And it becomes this entity that has its own thing out there, which is really a lot more interesting than just taking my idea and seeing my idea realized. It's maybe more stressful to get there, but it's really a lot more interesting.
Yeah, so I think that's right. Where you're agreeing with your two parallel things.
Yeah.
There's the work and then there's yourself and your community.
And you're going to get something out of both of
those. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We should probably wrap up pretty soon. Did you maybe one last question?
So you talked about this quite a bit, but just one thing is I'm working on a project where I'm more of the core person, and then people are helping, and I'm just wondering. I'm kind of dependent, and they're offering really valuable stuff that I can never do myself, and I'm always afraid of turning them off of the project, but also I'm not getting timely. What I requested.
Right.
So I was wondering how to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Scheduling is really hard. And it's another thing where it's really helpful if everyone can own the schedule. So it's not just coming top down from you, but if you have a meeting to talk about the timeline and people are committing, everyone has their little book and they all commit to the timeline together. And then at least they're letting themselves down too. They're kind of in on that.
Yeah.
I think that your point about making it as easy as possible for people to contribute is so big. So for instance, if somebody says, okay, well, I can do it for you in a week, if you can say, okay, well, I can come to your house and pick it up, or you can just send it to me via email, or just making it as simple as possible. And even you might think, okay, it might be more satisfying for you if I give you complete creative freedom. Say it's an article you want somebody to contribute or something like that. Maybe just the total freedom is not with her. Maybe they just want to give you something because they care about you and what you're doing, and they think, okay, I only have a couple of hours, what should I do? So maybe if you chat with them and suggest, well, I'd like something about this or that, and give them sort of a little structure that they can pour their idea into just to make it as easy as possible. That's, I think, one way to really speed things up, is just making it, greasing the gears making it fun and easy. And as clear as possible too, what the parameters are. Oh, I just need 3 paragraphs, or one page illustration, something like this or that, and things like that make it, I think, help it along.
But it's, something you think, you could just show up at their house with some beer or something. That could be something too.
You can also have the option of saying, I'm sorry, I need it now, and I can talk, if you don't want to do it, that's cool, just tell me. Yeah. You know, and just, I mean.
Oh yeah, you gotta draw the line.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
And for me, I find that there's a fine line between effective communication versus bugging them constantly. So it's about how you word things on email and on phone calls and making sure that you're saying the right thing so that you're not insulting them in any way or making sure that they're comfortable at all times. And I find that once they're comfortable, then there's that willingness to sort of give themselves up to sort of contribute to the project more effectively. So.
Yeah, and I think of myself as like the master of what I say and do.
Yeah.
Sometimes giving people an opportunity to back out too is good, you know, a graceful exit, saying, if you don't have time, it's totally cool, you know, and I have other things coming in and it's not going to hurt this. And sometimes that makes it easier for them to contribute next time, knowing that it's not going to disappoint you too much if they take it on and can't do it. Just saying, oh, graceful exit is an opportunity, then sometimes that makes things a lot easier between people too.
Okay,
thanks.
Let's have a big hand for these guys.